All right, wonderful. I've started the recording. So, Chris, it's really wonderful to meet you. And I appreciate you giving me this time just so that we could chat. And then I can share it with the members of Awakening Together.
Blessing to be with you, for sure.
Thank you. As I mentioned, Jonah Blue recommended you. And I have gone and I've looked at your website. And I listened to an interview that I found on YouTube. I can't remember the gentleman's name. I think his name was Alan. And
Alan.
Yes. Okay, good. So I know a little bit. But for the most part, what I'm going to do is just learn about you over this next 90 minutes. Is that okay?
Absolutely. If there is of the me.
Well, and when I say that very, very loosely. So, let me just tell you just a little bit about Awakening Together so that you'll know the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Awakening Together is really a church. It's an online church. But it embraces all spiritualities that point toward truth.
Yes, yes.
A large number of our members are interested in A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
A large number of our members are interested in Ramana Maharshi, Srinivas Gadada Maharaj, Robert Adams, The Way of Mastery, the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, and, you know, if I sat here and thought about it long enough, the list would go on. But it kind of just gives you an idea, maybe, of where the members are coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there were a couple things I found really interesting in your bio when I was reading your bio, but I feel like probably the best place to start maybe is just at the beginning to let people get to know you a little bit. And one thing that I saw was that you had what could be called a difficult childhood, and then that seemed to propel you onto the spiritual path. Do you want to just talk about that beginning a little bit, whatever you think is necessary to give somebody a feel for where you're coming from?
Yeah, when I incarnated into this identity, I incarnated into a household that in most ways was no different than every other, because it was all based on separation and limitation. So that as the base, it already had that, but it was I incarnated into a family that was filled with pain and filled with unconsciousness, really, you know, just lost in the survival identity. And we came from Belgium, immigrated, and then as from the very beginning, basically, there was nothing but rigidity and pain, suffering and attacks, and the beloved who came as I refer to everyone as the beloved who came as. So that was actually in the spiritual journey, that was a very strong message to, as the healing and the remembering began to unravel, it was really to hold every beloved as the truth of God, and to refuse to accept the roles anymore that I had given to everyone and that I held everyone in. So the beloved who came as my father was very mentally unstable, and in writing about my relationship with him, it was part of the uncovering was the realization that he was basically within the world could be described as a psychopath and a sociopath. And his he was very engrossed in causing pain, so torture became part of his way of living, and relieving himself of his own pain, or trying to anyways. And the beloved who came as my mother was, they both went through the Second World War in Europe, and she, as I discovered later, was very vacant and just lost in, really, in an identity of PTSD and escape, you know. So she was not there. And she worked very hard, but she was not available in any way. So it became just a journey of survival. And I ran away when I was 17. And but then went right connect, of course, because there was nothing else to connect to. So I ended up getting pregnant and getting married, and then trying to build a life that was reflected in the movies and in TV shows, because that's all I had to glean from. So it just continued. The time that I was, when I was young, I was not allowed out of the house. I was not allowed to have friends. I was beaten and kicked and pushed and punched and not given food and all of everything that goes with that. So, so the journey really began. I tried to commit suicide when I was 28. I had two children, and the pain was just overwhelming. And it didn't work. But I made every effort. I spent some time then, after the suicide attempt, I was taken to the mental hospital. And when I was released from there, I went very deeply into therapy. And in the therapy, I began to find some respite of learning how to cope and how to deal with things. And to self-inquire, that was really the first entry into self-inquiry,
what,
even though it was very limited.
I was going to say, what did that first entry kind of look like, just briefly?
Well, it looked like, you know, what was running right now, you know, like learning to identify the emotions, learning to identify choices that I had, even though they were still in very limited awareness. It was the starting point of learning to make other choices, and being given other choices of tools to use, breathing, or, you know, walking, or all different kinds of elements, you know, that come with therapy. As it progressed, I took communication classes to learn how to communicate and how to be a little bit more present, and so it just graduated from there. And at some point, I was in therapy for about 10 years, and I was very dedicated to it. I was, because as people would say to me sometimes, "How can you afford to go to therapy?" You know, because everything was so tight, and, you know, financially and things like that. And I really recognized even then that that if I had cancer, I would have to go to the doctor. Mm. And I felt completely as if this was a cancer, that this was life or death. And so I stayed with therapy for as long as it was working and serving. And at some point, it was the realization that this was not it either, that there was more, and somehow. And that's really when I began really investigating and inquiring more deeply into spiritual ways, spiritual paths, even though I'd been raised Catholic. I knew it wasn't that. And not in, you know, the mind was that, but it was really, it was not that for me. And, but I inquired through Native American, I inquired through, Jewish, I inquired through a little bit of Eastern teaching, but nothing really struck until, I began to explore really more of a mystical, way and began to feel more of a resonance with, to begin with energies and with connections through energies and learning like that and connecting in a very roundabout way to the divine and just learning. And in each step opened, each step beautifully opened because my prayer somehow within was that I was saying yes. And so different possibilities kept opening. And I would say yes, you know, to whatever really showed up that seemed to be a calling.
And can I ask you, you know, why did you say yes? Like, what would you say was the aspect?
The motivator.
Yeah, the motivator, exactly.
It really was the pain. It really was that I couldn't live there anymore. You know, and it was just, it was like a light that burned brighter in that direction than it did to look back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kept me propelled. And then at some point, you know, my sense of it is that there's a spark that gets sparked. And more remembering kind of begins to bubble through of something deeper, something more real, more true. And so it kept me moving. And I was at that time, I was married, and by then had two adult children. And this was not in any way what the beloved that I was married to at the time. That was nothing that he had any interest in or anything. So I just continued on my own, and everything kept opening. And it was, you know, whatever teaching came, whether it was in a book or whether it was someone to go sit with or however it showed up, I went. And it just kept speaking to me deeply within. And yet, I didn't have the, what would be the right word for it? The spiritual sophistication to recognize anything, you know, like, oh, this is this way or this is this way. And so I just kept inviting it in and it kept unfolding from there. And that's really the yes is so essential. And to be aware of that, yes, through the spiritual journey, and to trust that there is an answer to that, yes.
That's what I was about to ask next. Just as you said it, I was going to say, would you say that there was an inherent trust or a natural trust that you had?
No.
No. So so how did you develop this trust then? Because it must have been there.
You know, it was really each step. Certainly, you know, there really was a naiveness that at one point I saw very clearly when I was in a spiritual path. I saw very clearly how easily the spiritual ego of sophistication could veil everything. And really get you stuck.
Yeah. So
this knowing.
Yeah, so I was going to say, let me repeat that back to you in a different set of words just to see if I'm understanding. How's that sound?
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is if there's a lot of intellectual learning without the heart, without the practice, without the grace, I don't know how to say it, but it's just all intellectual, that it just becomes another act, spirituality.
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. It becomes another identity, another facade that's put on like a costume. And it's worn, and it's unconscious for the most part. But it's fear. It's all fear, as I would see much later, but it's all fear. It's I need to be protected in some way, so I'm going to wear this outfit now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost unconsciously, very limited consciousness in that. Not to say that every beloved that walks through that is completely unconscious. I don't mean that at all. But in that particular aspect, it's very easy to get caught in that. You know, as even it becomes kind of like a club.
Yes.
Club of knowing. And but really, truly, in the spiritual journey, what is absolutely necessary is that every sacred teaching is only truly helpful if it's put into manifestation, if you live it.
Yes.
You have to live it, you know, and that it comes from within. That's the choice. And that's really the leap of faith, because to have theory and to even believe it, celebrate it in some way, but not live it, it does nothing, because you just keep staying in the same syndrome.
Yeah, and maybe that's a way a person can tell if that might be happening for them, is that they are staying in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that there's no, and beloved say this to me all the time in teaching. Why am I still so caught in this? Well, you have to really bring the teaching of love into your life and take that leap of faith and live it with every relationship, with every situation. It's an opportunity. That's your schoolroom. This is a schoolroom. You know, this is the divine schoolroom of love, where, you know, you came in the belief that you were separate from the divine, from God, and now it's a calling to learn the way of love. But to learn the way of love, it's to use it, to live it, and to take that risk of opening your heart and offering love.
Can you just give me any example at all? Because I know that there's more than one way to live the love, live the wisdom. But can you give me one example, if you forgive the words, a do and a do not, like when a situation arises, what is living the spirituality and what is not living the spirituality, just to kind of draw a picture?
Sure. But let's say, so everyone in their day is, you know, whether they're going to a job or whether their job is to relax, it doesn't make any difference. But in the everyday life, you're meeting beloveds most of the time, you know, all day long in different situations. Let's say you're going to get gas for the car, and you're at the service station, and you have a choice in that moment. Are you present in that moment to see the beloved who is pumping the gas? In Oregon, you can't pump your own gas. So, you know, are you recognizing that this is the light of God?
Mm-hmm.
Are you choosing to recognize? Because in that moment, and in every moment, you have a choice. You may not recognize that you have the choice when you're in the trance of habit, when you're in the trance of identity that everything is just as you think it is. and you can recognize it, and then I know what this is, and I know what pumping gas is, and I know that I'm here at the gas station, but I'm not connected here. But here is the moment. Being in that gas station and connecting with this beloved who's pumping the gas. Not, you know, it's not about talking necessarily at all. It's just about the blessing and the willingness to see that this is the light of God, that this is the purity of all being right here, and opening your heart to that beloved as deeply as you can, and have no judgments, because all judgments, all opinions, and all assessments are to try to protect and defend and stay separate. And to know, you know, that's what you think you know. That's where all assessments and judgments and opinions.
Now, of course, Chris, I'm sorry, please continue.
Okay,
I was going to say, you know, whenever we talk about letting go of judgment at one level, I'm sure you know people understand. But at another level, you know, I always say when the rubber hits the road, sometimes it just seems like there's a judgment that is so right that it almost feels like a sin to them to let go of the judgment. And, you know, some of the common examples that people share are, well, like what your father did to you, you know, when people are abusing puppies. Yeah, it should be judged, and to not judge it is somehow neglectful or sinful. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? How do we let go of judgment even in these extreme?
I'll use that as the example.
Perfect.
So this beloved that I walked with, you know, in childhood, I ran away from home when I was 17, and at 25, 21. I recognize that if I continue to see him physically, I would die. That somehow I would die. And I made the choice to never see him again. Out of the wanting to survive. And I never saw him again. But of course, just because of, you know, and to a certain extent, that was what I had to do with where I was. You know, that was all that I could do. But in the spiritual journey, I realized this, he had never been out of my mind. He had always been with me. He had always been this belief in danger. He represented, he was a symbol of the belief in danger and the belief in death, even. And so the journey really focused very deeply around letting go, surrendering everything I thought I knew about him, everything that I thought he was, to allow the spirit of love to show me the truth, to open to the divine truth that, you know, in all the teachings of love, and they always come back to the same thing, that there's only one. That there is only one truth of love. And everything is that. Everything. And so if I could accept this teaching, if I wanted to accept this teaching, I had to live it completely with even this beloved. And I went through all the stages of, you know, the hatred, the fear, the projection, everything. And every day, that was what I had to do, was to surrender what I thought I knew about who he was and let myself show the truth of this beloved. I did not refer to him as my beloved for most of that journey because it wasn't there. At some point in healing, because if I really want him to come home, really wanting to remember the truth of oneness, the truth of love, he had to come with me. I had to invite him into my heart, not as a metaphor, not as a some kind of idea, but truly, truly invite him home and join with this heart so that it could open to a warm heart. And this was not me doing the healing. This was the power of love. Through the yes, they can heal anything. There was a master when I entered a spiritual path. One of the masters within that path had a teaching that said stars had told him that in this world everything would be healed. And when I received that, and when I received it, it was like my life jacket. It was like the life preserver. That for the first time, I had such a deep hope in that truth. That I put my faith in that truth.
Yes.
That everything could be healed. And yeah. That there was nothing that was beyond the power of God to heal, and that I, and this was the radicalness of the journey, coming finally to the realization, everything that I thought I knew was the belief of separation from God. Everything that I had lived in the past and thought I knew was only the separation from God, played out in my own script, played out in my own identity, my own belief of separation. And it had to be taken and manifested, but I also had to do it in every moment with everyone, you know, everyone. So at one point there was a beloved who, when I was working at a regular job and, you know, all of that, and kept praying, why am I here? Why am I here? And Spirit would show me. The divine guides that I had would show me, and they would, you're here because this is your school room, the ordinary school room of learning how to offer love in every moment, no matter what the situation, and how to let go of everything you think you know about everything and come empty and want to see the truth in this moment. So there was a beloved who was actually the husband of one of my partners, and in business, and he was what anybody would refer to as a problem. Mm-hmm. He was rude. He was crude. He was nasty, he was moody, whatever you want to call it, you know. And everyone had this agreement. Everyone had this agreement. I mean, really had an agreement that everybody, when he called on the phone, everybody would roll their eyes. Everybody would have a reaction of, oh, God, here he is again. And trying to defend and get shored up to defend and, you know, stay protected. So at one point, one of my guides for most of the spiritual journey that I walked consciously was Jesus. And at that point, Jesus said to me, "This is who you have to learn to love. This is the one. This is the one that you believe is beyond loving." And I had to surrender so deeply everything I thought I knew about this beloved. And everything, and surrendering it all into the hands of God, surrendering it, disowning it. Like, I don't want this anymore. this, I refuse to accept that he is, this. He can't be this. If he's that, then I'm this. This can't be the truth. And the willingness to open my heart and be undefended and to want to see the light within him, to want to see his innocence, and that this was not who he was, and that he could not harm me. There was no harm, which then comes into being a body, you know, the identity of being a body, and believing that when you believe you're a body, you're vulnerable. You're in danger because death is real. So I opened my heart and I said, yes, I'm willing to let this go. Do what I can't do. I surrender this. I don't want to see this anymore. I want to learn to love this beloved. And the miracle just was there and it was gone. And all of my resistance to him, all of my reaction to him, everything was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt this love and compassion for what he believed in, but that I was going to hold it for him. I was going to hold the truth of him for him and serve his journey of remembering. And when he would call on the phone after that, I would be filled with joy.
Mm-hmm.
I would be filled with joy at his voice. And I would be happy. No one else that was there was happy. Everyone else that was there was still rolling their eyes and everything else. But I it wasn't for me to, you know, correct anyone else, but just to offer love and to see everyone as that divine innocence.
So, you know, as you're speaking, of course, what I'm hearing is, you know, just this absolute consistency that you had because of your strong willingness. You must have had an absolute consistency to not listen to those thoughts anymore that said, you know, whatever those same old things were about him.
Right. Well, it's a choice. And for some reason, I was willing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I didn't fall, that I didn't forget. I forgot a lot. So I would forget and I'd have to begin again. But I took for some reason, and I know that this is in everyone, or else it's not in me. There's nothing within that was within me that served healing that isn't in everyone. It's just accessing it. And it's just really, even asking the questions for yourself that are the most helpful. So the question, what do you truly want, is so essential. Because the key is truly.
Mm.
You know, if you take the word truly out of it, and you just say, what do you want? Oh, I mean, there's a never-ending supply of answers. Truly want, truly, everyone wants peace. Everyone wants respite. Everyone wants to embrace joy and live and freedom. That's what you truly want, everyone. And that calling has always the two choices. And it's also coming to the recognition that you have choice. Because really, for the most part, the belief that you are asleep and that state of trance, that state of sleep, is so mesmerizing in so many ways. And yet, it's a learning to learn that you have choice. And that's what all the teachings are for. That's one of their purposes, is to open your awareness to the choice and to step out of that trance that believes that you're a victim, that the world is happening to you, rather than this is what I believe. What I'm seeing is what I believe. That's my story being reflected to me. Whether it's comparison, whether it's judgment, whether it's levels and degrees of different things, good and bad, right and wrong, it's all your belief being shown back at you. And that you have the choice. That's where the power comes from. That's where you join in the power of God, is in that choice, in recognizing I am not weak, but strong in the truth of love. I am not helpless, but all-powerful in the truth of love. And to keep accepting that and letting it lead you and letting it pull you forward in your journey of remembrance.
One of the spiritual teachings that I'm really familiar with, and most people in Awakening Together are really familiar with, is A Course in Miracles. And I can hear the Course in you.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about your experience with the Course, your relationship with the Course?
I'm going to start with a little story about it first, because I was very drawn and called and deeply committed to a shamanic path. And when I was in that shamanic path, there was a beloved who came to a ritual, and we had known each other a little bit, and I felt very close to her, very connected to her. And the next day we had a gathering where the beloveds that were just visiting could express their learnings, you know, from the ritual. And this beloved said, "What I learned was that my path is the Course in Miracles." And in my arrogance at the time, I looked at her and I thought, "That's not a path. That's a book. It doesn't have any rituals, it doesn't have any, you know, it doesn't have any form to it." And it just showed my ignorance, you know. But later when I was called to the Course, that was a really great awareness of my ignorance at the time. But when I was called to the Course, immediately, because I was very open to energy, and I was very, very connected with Jesus, very, very much listened to his calling to me, and his vibration, and his guidance, constantly asking him, where do you want me to go? What's most helpful? Show me the way. So when I opened to the Course, it was just this exquisite truth that just came pouring and unraveling everything for me. And I dove into this because it called me so deeply. And I began truly living those teachings and using them and being honest and as deeply as possible with when I was losing my way and when I was followed, and to keep coming back and to use all the tools of forgiveness and truth and everything. And I just used it very, very deeply and trusted it. And, you know, my sense is that that's a very essential element of whatever the spiritual path is, whatever it is that you're called to. It's trusting that teaching and really choosing that teaching and refusing to accept what you think you know. Because what you think you know is the ego. It's all past. It doesn't have any reality to it. It's just what you've used and what you developed. And it's emptying yourself of that and accepting the truth and relying on whatever teaching it is to show you a new way and wanting that new way. There's one time I saw a very clearly, I was sitting with a teacher who was visiting the area, went to sit in Salsang, and while I was there, I was shown how easily it is to be the judge of the teacher, to be the judge of the teaching, that there is this subtle, sometimes not so subtle, but can often be very subtle place within the ego system that says, okay, I'm just going to see whether I like this or not, and whether I agree. Well, who is it that's agreeing? Who is it that, is there love there that's connecting? Is there love there that's inviting? Not when there'd be a judgment of the teaching. And when there's a judgment of the teaching, it's just fear that's showing up that says, I need to be in control. I want to be in control. I'm not going to enter into something. I'm not going to accept something that I don't know, because that's been the whole journey, is protection and defense and the belief that there is safety in that protection and defense. And so when I said yes to the course, it was a diving in and a drinking in and taking it as nourishment and taking it as medicine and taking it in as the divine transmission of love that could heal. And it did. And it does. And at the same time, I was very called to other teachers that were in divine union with Jesus. Not that had to be a prerequisite, but of course they were, because all divine teachers are in divine union with each other and are just in a temporary aspect to serve humanity's remembrance. So I had, you know, there were other teachers, Ramakrishna, and then I had a teacher who had been in form and had passed out of form and became my teacher guide from without form. So I had many teachers in that way, but they were all offering the same teaching.
And the teacher that had been in form and passed and then became your teacher, who was that?
His name was Jose.
Okay.
And he was just this. He had woken up, and he was just this beautiful light that was perfect at the moment, of course, because mm-hmm. that's what was brought, and so that's who I listened to, put my faith in, that not in him as a person, you know, that was not it. And as a matter of fact, that's what he would always say, "Oh, look at me. I'm just pointing the way. You know, I'm just showing you the way. That's it. And don't get attached to the identity here. You know, just keep going toward the truth." Which is part of the journey too.
Yeah, well, again, as I, you know, as I'm listening to you speaking, what I'm hearing is that, you know, your desire for healing or awakening or whatever you would call it was so strong and so focused, that everything that was needed for you was provided, whether it was something in form or out of form.
Absolutely.
And because you used what was given, you know, one of my influences was a woman named Peace Pilgrim, and she used to say, if you live up to the highest light you have, higher light will be given. And I hear that you did that too, even starting with the very beginning with your, you know, traditional therapy. You know, you did that traditional therapy to the best that you could, and you got out of it what you could, and so more came.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And what drove that? It certainly was the pain. But there's a deeper awareness within. You know, there is a deeper, because if it was just the pain, then everyone who's in that same kind of pain, which is almost everyone, would have the same journey.
Well, not only that, I think if it was just the pain, you would come to a point where you weren't suffering as much, and then you would lose your motivation.
Yeah, you know, there was a beloved that I spent time with, spiritual time with, and he and I would go by this creek that I live nearby, and we would meditate and pray and together. And one time he said to me, he finally said, I don't want to give up what I have. And what he believed that he had was he was a pretty wealthy guy, within the world, and he had his partner, his wife, and their child, and he had built a life that was very comfortable, and he saw that as threatened. He saw it as losing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that he would have to give that up. And it's like I say to beloved, now I had a beloved say to me one time, are you asking us to give up everything? And I said, no, I'm asking you to give up what's nothing. I'm inviting you to give up what is really nothing for everything.
Hmm.
For everything that is love, that is true, that is reality. But that's how it, you know, that reaction was very much the fear that runs within, for most, or for many at least, that, you know, I want to stay in what I know. I want to stay because of the belief that control is essential to survival, you know, and really the spiritual journey is about really letting go of the belief that control has any validity, that there's anything to control. And that's even a bigger joke in the world, because there's nothing to control here either. The illusion shifts and moves and changes all the time. That's what everybody's trying to control.
Right.
Okay, I want to keep this exactly the way it is right now, in form, and this is what I like. This is the way I want it to be. And, of course, it always shifts. It always changes. And then there is a fear that comes up, but now they have to scramble and get more control of something else. So it's a vicious cycle.
I noticed, of course, that your website is called The Awakened Heart of Chris Selene.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about your awakening and also just speak about what is awakening?
Well, I think it is, I'm asked this often, and it's really somewhat beyond description, you know. There's always a lack of words or ability to really speak of it. And how it manifests, I'm gonna back up here a little bit, because really I realized that at some point, even though awakening, quote unquote, was talked about a lot, you know, that you could read it all over the place, you know, and have books on it and everything all over the place. But I realized that at a particular place that I couldn't have a goal. I couldn't be searching for something that was already here. And I had to let go of any push to get to the goal, but to really drop into here and live here in this moment, in the yes of God, in the yes of love, and to rest in God, to really just rest, and to not be looking for anything, and that there was nothing to do and nothing to get, ever. Everything was here. And whether I recognized it as everything or I didn't was not up to me. I just kept saying yes. Yes to life. Yes to love. Yes to, yes, God. Yes to oneness. Yes. And in that, everything at some point fell away. And whether it was, there was, I will speak to this too, that along the journey, I had many what some call awakenings. And what I really refer to them as light experiences. There is an instantaneous awareness of oneness, of everything just dropping away, and just love, and peace, complete peace, just, you know, whether it's for a few moments in time, it doesn't matter, but sometimes longer, sometimes short, you know, just. But it wasn't a goal. It just was spontaneous. And then at some point, it was all that there was anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, it wasn't, and yet there was an awareness that, oh, but not really an awareness from self anymore. From an idea, an identity, or a me, whatever you want to call it. And it was just all love. And in that, it became how to be in this world and not of it. How to serve this moment. Which was, you know, I was with that, the teaching for quite a long time of Chocolate Carry Water before Enlightenment Chocolate Carry Water, after Enlightenment Chocolate Carry Water. And it really is that, except that before, if there's a me that's chopping wood and carrying water after Enlightenment, chopping wood is happening and carrying water is happening. But it's not personal. And that's really the dropping away, that it's all, there's nothing personal. There's nothing to get. There's nothing, it's just here now, this moment. There's nothing else. But it's perfect. And it's just peace. It's just love.
And
not just love like it's a mental thing, but it's all love. There's nothing else.
And I'm asking this question because of A Course in Miracles, actually, the next question, because, you know, A Course in Miracles puts a lot of emphasis on teaching, I am not a body.
Mm-hmm.
I am free. I'm still as God created me. So my next question then is, what is your experience of the body?
Not personal. that's in, you know, in a few words, that's what it is. It's not personal. It's not, it serves, it's a vehicle. I'm looking for the right word for it. It's a way of expressing love. It's a way of conveying love. It's a way of just offering love. But other than that, it has really no intrinsic value in and of itself. It can be used for love or it can be used for attack. And it's not, it's not personal. It's not really anything on its own at all. You know, it's like taking hair and saying, well, what is this? And yet, in the transformation, so through that teaching, I'm not a body, there is this deep opportunity of accepting this so deeply that if I am not this, what am I? What is really here? An opening to the divine spirit that uses this vehicle, this manifestation of that's temporary. It's just a temporary house. But it can be the temporary temple to be used to offer love and to serve love and to chop wood, carry water. You know, my teacher Jose would sometimes say that he was very happy and ready to leave the body. And he passed when he was in age 54. And that he was very happy to leave the body if he could serve more fully without it.
Mm-hmm.
If he could offer more love, offer healing and help more fully without it.
And I would assume that he would have been just as happy to stay in the body if that's...
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It was irrelevant.
Yeah, irrelevant.
Yeah. Let me ask this question. What about health of the body? Do you think there is a relationship between the awakened mind and the health of the body?
To a certain extent, and this can be very misconstrued. All masters leave the body eventually, you know, and many actually leave pretty early because it just burns up. You know, it's not, it because of its tangibility, it's, you know, vulnerability in that way. Is there a letting go of pain and suffering? Absolutely. The relationship of the mind that holds the judgment and self-attack and self-hatred is attacking the body all the time. And that is where all the pain and the suffering comes from. The suffering is, I am unloved. I am not worthy of love. I am this body. I'm a prisoner. I'm limited. I'm without hope. I'm without possibilities because I'm in this prison. And it's to recognize that when there is a true letting go of the beliefs that run the mind, those beliefs that say, I am this, and this is my identity. This is about letting go of this false identity of being a body, of being limited, of being separate. And being temporary. And what really ends up holding it together at its root is the belief in death and the fear of death. The belief that when you die, whatever you believe, whether you believe in reincarnation or you, but that there is a mourning for that life when that life is not gone. That life is still completely here. It is just because of the limitation of the attachment to the senses that hold that in place. If I that believes it is that identity says, I believe that I can't see it, I can't smell it, I can't feel it, and I can't hear it. So it's not here. I believe in the body. It's not in the body. It doesn't exist. But the being of love is still completely present and can only be here. This is where love is, here. Heaven is here in the sense of heaven being the freedom of love, the letting go of all limitation, the belief in limitation. So the letting go of the body identity doesn't necessarily guarantee. Are there masters who break their legs? Absolutely. Are there, you know, when Ramakrishna was diagnosed with throat cancer, his disciples came to him and said, Master, heal yourself. You can do this. We know you can do this. And he said, I'm not called to.
Yes.
I'm not called to do that. I'm here to serve, and this is the service that I'm offering. The service that I'm offering is to show all of you that there is no pain and that there is no suffering and that there is only joy in every moment. And he lived that joy. He lived that love. And that was his offering. And when it was done, the body fell away. And this beloved is still in complete life. Not as an identity of Ramakrishna. That was his earthly identity, just as the Christ, Jesus, took on that identity of a name called Jesus. But his teaching was the same. The same teaching. I'm not this body. I'm the light. As you are the light, one with me. And you have done nothing, absolutely nothing, to change the truth of who you are. You can't. And that was the demonstration of the crucifixion. The demonstration of the crucifixion was, you're not damaging me. There's no me here to be damaged. And you're not sinning. You're not doing anything that is changing the truth of who you are. You're just lost in a trance that believes in hatred and fear. That's all. And it isn't true. And to demonstrate that it isn't true, I'm going to re-show up again. I'm going to resurrect, and I'm going to be right here with you and show you and bring to you the teaching of eternal life. Not because I was special, not because I was the only son of God, as it's sometimes held, but that I am the child of God, one with you, and you are the child of God. This you and me is what is being healed. That's what's called to let it disappear. And accept the light that you are. Accept the innocence that you are. Accept the beauty that you are. And not as a you as an individual. Not you as what you think you are, but as the divine of love. So the use of the body is to, within those teachings, is to surrender all the concepts of the belief that you are this body and all that that holds, including pain and suffering, of course, and the belief in limitation. But at the same time, not having a concept of that you know, when you wake up, it's going to be that nothing in the world is going to touch you anymore. Like somehow you're like impervious to raising a leg or cancer or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just that none of that matters. If there's a call for treatment, you have treatment. If you're not called to treatment, you don't have treatment. It doesn't matter. What is most helpful?
Yeah. That's beautiful. Thank you. I have another question. I'm not quite sure how to ask it, so if you start hearing what I'm saying before I'm done, feel free to interrupt.
Okay.
But the question, again, I'm coming from knowing many students of A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Course says things like the world is an attack on God. And, of course, that it says that the world is not real, the world does not exist, the body does not exist. So you'll hear things like, if someone is awakened, you know, they won't be in a body anymore, they won't be here anymore. You'll hear things, let me just switch gears. And then other traditions, of course, say that everything is God, that the world is God, that manifestation is God.
Yeah.
So I think I'm just going to stop there, because like I said, I can't even formulate the question, but maybe you see where I'm going.
Yeah. Is there a discrepancy between those? No, there isn't. It's the interpretation of it, or going deeper into it. Here, everything that has been made by fear and hatred is just illusion. It's not everything that is true is God. Everything that is real is God. Now, when you look at a tree, and you look at that tree and you think, well, those are the leaves, this is the name, this is the, you know, species, you know, all of that that goes into that. Is that the tree? No. That's the tree that was made in the belief that it's different and it's separate and it's temporary. But go beyond that. Go beyond that and meet the light within it. That is the truth. Go into every animal. Every animal, there is a divine being within that form. It's the falling away of all that's been made up that's temporary that just falls away and goes back into the dirt. I mean, it's just, you know, when this beloved that comes as a cat, you know, you don't know this beloved. Open your heart and meet the divine that's within that form. Everything is God. In that truth, everything is God. There's nothing that isn't. And what isn't just is temporary and it falls away. It's just, and it's still, in that, it's still part of the divine, but it's not its shape. It's not it's what you're making out of it in this, not you personally, but whatever anybody is making out of something. It's to go beyond. Go beyond that limited idea and let yourself be taken into that communion with the true life. Open to the moon, open to the stars, open. They're all a living, divine being. All one. Just, you know, put into a form that says separate. Separate, 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 separate. Instead of, you are the moon. You are the sun. You are the star. Open to the divine essence of everything. And embrace life. And then you can really live here. Because there's only peace. There's only harmony. There's no conflict. The conflict is all coming from the belief of separation that says, well, this is this, and this is this, and this is this. And there's just no love there. And it isn't about loving the trees from the human essence of I'm this and you're that, but to really embrace that there is a divine oneness that is not being recognized, and let yourself flow with that. Let yourself be taken into that through prayer, through the yes, through the wanting.
Yeah, I feel like repeating that through prayer, through the yes, through the wanting.
Yes.
Yeah, because you know it's simple, and of course even A Course in Miracles says that it's simple.
It is.
But as you know, it can seem complicated for some.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, this is where all the tools come in too, because and I use this often with beloved, is that whenever you find yourself feeling things are complicated, you're in the ego. It's the ego that's complicated. Love is not complicated. Come back. Drop back in again. And just rest. Rest and let go of that anything is complicated. It's not. It's not complex. It's not, there's no turmoil in it. It's the mind wants to make it complicated. You know, the ego mind wants it to be complicated so that you become discouraged in a sense. You know, and then you can go back to what you know. So, and not move forward. But the letting go I once joked that I would write a book and it would be 400 pages and there would, one page would hold the word trust, and the next page would hold the word surrender.
Mm.
And then trust, and then surrender. Trust, and then surrender. And that would be the whole book.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Because that's all that it really comes back to. What am I believing? What am I putting my faith in? What do I truly want? And just resting there. I was called at one time for several years, actually, to have bookends in my everyday life, and the bookends were I rest in God and I need do nothing. Mm. And those were, you know, very, very specific teachings and entering into the recognition that there was nothing really to do. And the resting was giving the mind back to God and resting and just being. And allowing and trusting. And that was it. And how essential that was to stay between those bookends. Because the mind wanted to wander off and make problems and make situations and make disturbances and, you know, everything. But just to come back and trusting. Because that place of resting is really, it's not about the resting, you know, beloveds will sometimes say, well, if I'm resting all the time, I can't get anything done. It's not about a physical resting. It's the inner resting of trust and communion. If you can be in communion with love all day and still serve. And serve fully, whether it's, driving a truck, it doesn't matter what it is. Being a parent, it doesn't matter what it is. You're trusting and you're communing, and in that communion, you're ready to offer love. Because that's what you're there for. And you're questioning, and you're asking, and you're opening to guidance, which is so essential also. Guidance. Of accepting, I will step back and let God lead. I will let the Holy Spirit speak to me. I will let the voice of love lead me and show me the way, because I don't know the way. How could I know? All I know is the path. You know, that was my mantra to myself over and over and over again. How could I know? I don't know anything. And if I accept that I don't know anything, then I need to be guided. So in the teaching, I don't know how to look at this situation or this moment. I don't know how to look on this. And I don't know how to respond. Well, where is the response going to come from? Except if you ask for the guidance to show you what's most helpful here. What's truly most helpful? Because I want to align with what's most helpful, and I don't know. Show me the way. And the more that you open that awareness and that relationship with guidance, the more you step out of the personal identity and the personal knowing and the habit of that. It's a place of humility and a place of trust.
Chris.
Arrogance. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say arrogance, which sometimes is held as an idea of, you know, someone who thinks a lot of themselves, and that can be it. But the arrogance is really, I know something.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because that almost, it kind of leads to my next question. My next question was going to be, how did you come to be a teacher? And the reason I ask is because there's certainly those who want to be a teacher. I would say in an egotistical way, it's a goal of theirs to become a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there are others who become a teacher without that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm asking.
What was part of the funniness of this is that when I was early on in the shamanic path that I was in, I received clarity, which was really surprising to me. And it was very clear. And I could feel the honesty of it, the truth of it, that I was being called to serve as a quote-unquote healer. And I took that very deeply into my heart, and it showed me, each me, well, nothing changed. I kept going to work every day, and every day I would ask, really, is this what I'm supposed to do? Where I'm supposed to be. I got this message, and now nothing's going on with it. Well, in the perfection of God's direction, I was in that same job for, I think it was 8 more years. And that was my schoolroom of learning humility and learning to disattach. And if I would have been taken more directly into whatever you want to call a healer, teacher, whatever, I would have taken that identity and worn it like a new one. And it would have limited my awareness so deeply. So that never manifested itself. And in awakening, I was still just being. You know, there was no, but it was a calling. It was a calling, and at one point, because I was never a speaker or, you know, anything that would resemble somebody who would lead in any way. And at one point, there was this burning in my throat chakra. Burning, 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 burning. And there was an energy that recognized that I would go and stand on street corners if that's what was necessary to offer love and to speak the truth. That it was a burning that needed to be manifested. And it wasn't anything personal. At all. There wasn't anything to be personal about it, but there was nothing personal there. And it just opened, and beloved started showing up. And just one step, that was it.
Yeah. I have another question, and the question is, you know, awakening together, We offer retreats, and we invite different teachers at different times to come and be our retreat leaders. Do you welcome invitations like that?
I have to be with it.
Okay, I understand. Well, it's not time now anyway, so we'll just toss it aside for now, and if the time comes, then I'll let you be with it.
Perfect.
One thing that interests me is, again, you are, in a way, coming from the Course, and most of Awakening Together's members, the Course is one of their primary guides. And yet, there is something very non-course, maybe non-intellectual about you, something very clear. It's the same clarity I find in many, many teachers who know nothing about the Course. So the fact that you have the clarity and you have the Course makes you a very nice fit for our audience.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll talk at some point. But as I mentioned, it isn't time now anyway. But let's say, because it's very possible when I play this recording Sunday night, that people will recognize the same thing in you that I recognize. And some of them may want to contact you in some way or another. So we only have a few minutes left. Why don't you talk a little bit about the service that's available or et cetera. Go ahead.
Well, there are many, many satsangs that are, they're just switching. I think they're switching to YouTube right now in a more full way. There's a beloved who takes care of all of that. But so those are always available. And it's really, there are prayers that are on the website that are for, they can be downloaded. There are teachings on the website that can be listened to. This is all offered. And there's also a satsang every Tuesday and Thursday evening through, My sense is it's still through Eastern. We just switched it over this weekend, but it's on the website. So, anyone can tune in and join, listen, receive. And there's also a meditation. And this is what you'll see in the satsang, is that I always begin the satsang with the sacred hymns that were channeled through different beloveds in the shamanic path, and they're very powerful, and they're very opening, because they're brought by divine beings, you know, from the other side, so to speak. And I use those to open the space and to open the teaching. So all that is available. And private sessions by phone are also available. And that's also on the website. You know, to make contact. That's something that's helpful.
All right. And the website that I have is chrisselene.org. But isn't there another address as well?
Yeah, it's, I can't remember what it is. I'm pretty sure it's awakenedheart.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure a Yahoo or a Google search will turn it up.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to say this for the recording. The website that I'm looking at now is chrisceline.org, chrisceline.org, and it offers everything that she just now spoke about. So, yeah. Well, Chris, I just want to thank you very much. This has been wonderful, and as I mentioned, I will play this on Sunday night in our sanctuary, our online sanctuary. It'll also be posted on our website for anyone who wants to listen another time. If you have any interest in the recording, I would be happy to send it to you, and you can do with it as you will.
Oh, thank you.
What I'm going to do now is just stop. I'm going to say one more thank you and stop the recording, but if you would hang on the phone for just a moment.
Okay.